So today I was at a math training and we had different, like obviously different sections. Like the first one we talked about just the curriculum and the pacing, and we did like I bounced ideas on like how different teachers do different things and blah blah blah. The second session was we learned like oh my gosh, like positive reinforcement and like things like that. Then we went back and we did a third session for like solving equations and like the manipulatives and like what manipulatives you can use online versus, pen and pencil, blah, blah. So then we come together for the last session, and this is like high school teachers. We've been divided up all day. Come together and I'm like leaning in my bag. So my head is down, right? And she's like telling people to come to the board to rate how they feel about probability and statistics. And when I tell you, I was crop dusted so hard that it went into my mouth because I was leaning down in my bag. I literally thought I was going to puke. And my coworker, my friend, she's like, "What's wrong with you?" I said, "Somebody just crop dusted me so freaking bad." And I could see her nose scrunch up. She goes, "Oh my God, I smell it." I said, "Well, yeah, it went in my mouth."
That's gross.
We're adults. So if you are the person who crop dusted me today, shame on you. And cut.
I'm Ashley.
I'm Brooke.
And you're here with us on DJ's We Talk Crime
Podcast. Yeah. Yeah. I've been in a conference all day, which was super productive until I got crop dusted.
See, you can just say it. She got farted in her mouth, yo.
Yeah. I mean, y'all heard the intro.
Yeah. The fart was in her mouth.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was fun. But And then we don't have a fall break. So I am giving myself a fall break.
Do you normally get one?
No, but we get a full week for Thanksgiving.
Oh, so do we.
Yeah. So we opted out of fall break to have a full week at Thanksgiving, which I would prefer. But granted, I've been giving myself fall breaks for 2 years now.
Solid.
Yeah. So I'm giving myself a fall break this past weekend. When you hear this episode, I will still be on my said fall break. And James and I are going to Yellowstone.
Yellowstone, it's a stone that's yellow. It's Yellowstone. I don't know.
Yep, that's exactly how it works. So COVID has ruined this trip for me for the past 3 years, and I'm not going to let it do it again. So we're going.
Yes, fourth time's a charm, baby.
Yelp. So
that's gonna
doing
be so
all the
much
nature
fun.
Stuff.
Yep, take a picture of them yellow stones.
I will. I'll get them. I'll get them.
I'll be here in the great old Delaware area, so it's a good time. It's a good time. Yes.
And if you received your winner chicken dinner prizes, will you please post us? If you have not already, that would be amazing.
Amazeballs, for real.
I was going to say that, but I was like, should we say the word balls? But
too late. Already did it. Amazeballs. It's done. We're adults. We're all adults here. I mean, some of you may be kids, and if you're listening, you chose to listen to it, so.
Speaking of balls.
Oh.
I...
Oh, wow, that took a turn. Oh, wow.
Obviously, you guys know, like, my teaching schedule this year. And one of my accelerated kids decided during rotations that we do every Wednesday, because we do winning Wednesdays. If you want to know more about it, then let me know. But we do winning Wednesdays. And one of the rotations is, like, it's the acronym for math. So M is meet the teacher. A is at your seat. T is technology, and H is hands-on. And the hands-on station is usually at like one of the whiteboards or a sorting activity. Well, this particular day, it was at a whiteboard. And I'm doing my small group intervention, and I look over, and one of my accelerated children have drawn a penis on the board and is trying to erase it. And I catch him, and he then denies it, that it is not, in fact, a penis. And then a girl goes, "Can we say the word penis, Miss Dozier?" And I said, "Well, it is anatomy, and it is called the body part." She said, "So I can say the D word, too?" And I went, "That's not accurate. Nope. Uh-uh. You cannot."
Wow.
So, yep.
The mm-hmm. pressure is getting wusser.
Yeah.
Just when you think, you know, the school year just can't throw you any fly balls, there's a penis on the board.
There is a penis on the board. That they said was not actually a penis, Miss Dozier. It was a boy on a skateboard.
I wonder how they played that off.
Mm-hmm. The balls were the wheels of the skateboard.
Yeah.
And the tallness, the thing, the tallness was supposed to be the person.
So there was actually no skateboard. He was just rolling around on wheels. So he was roller skating?
I guess so. The logic wasn't there.
The math was not mathing here.
The math was not mathing. No. I need to make a TikTok about that one. Let me write that one down. Tell my penis story.
Not tell my penis story. Yeah.
Yes.
I can't.
So, fun times as a teacher, guys. Fun times.
Yes. This is the best time for teachers. Also, send us your teacher stories.
Oh, yeah. Way to throw that in there.
Thank you.
Yes.
At teacherstalkcrimepodcast@gmail.com. Because we really want to just do this. We really just want to do this teacher episode. Like, really.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, do you want to tell them about the full moon? Even though the full moon will be passed by the time this comes out. But, you know.
Yes. So, this is how my week went. I went to work Monday. I went to work Tuesday. I left Tuesday after school to go and spend the night where this conference was. I was at the conference all day Wednesday. I will go to work tomorrow, and we have observations that no one knew was even on our calendar. I took a half a day Friday. I will be in Yellowstone Friday to Tuesday, and then I go back to work. So, needless to say, I've been busy. Do I have the happy hour case almost ready with some fine tuning? Yes, I do. Will it not be a happy hour case that for a full moon, it will be a happy hour case for like a crescent moon? Mm-hmm. It's going to be one of the moons. Something. But it just ain't going to be full.
It might be a toenail moon.
Toenail moon it is. It's coming. It's coming. So y'all just keep it up to date, because like you might wake up on like a random Wednesday and there's just going to be an extra episode there.
Period.
So just keep it posted. We will get it out. It's almost there. It's almost ready. So it's just not going to be on the 9th when the full moon takes place, but it's coming.
Okay. I appreciate that.
Yes.
And they appreciate that. Because one thing I feel like our listeners really enjoy is how real we are. Like, yes. Everybody knows, we talk about every episode, this school year is a new one of its kind. It's a new one of its kind. And we're not able to do things as we once were because we're working so hard. Not to say we weren't working in the past.
Yeah. I'll also say it is harder. This is not, I mean, you guys know it's not our full-time job yet. Maybe one day it will be, but like, it's not our full-time job. And yes. Even today, like my coworker Medley was like, I was like, I have to go. I've already had two bangs and two cups of coffee.
Not
and
a
I still
bang.
Could lay my, yes, I could lay my head down right now and go to sleep. And I was like, I still have to go home and record. And she was like, how do you do it? Mm-hmm. And I was like, I could say the same about you. You have kids. And then she was like, and I was like, oh shit, Ashley got two kids and teaches and got a podcast. I was like, how does she do it?
Child, just faith.
Faith. Living on prayer.
Faith.
We live on prayer.
Some days it'd be rough. I mean, we try and make sure we record the days I don't have the girls, so it's like not as strenuous. Yes. But sometimes we record and they're here and Brooke can just see it on my face that I'm just like, let's just record this because bedtime took me to another level.
Yeah. So we're doing our best. I mean, I hope that one day this could be full time, but then again, I wouldn't have all the stories about teacher life that we have. But you know, who knows what the future holds? Yeah. But just know you're getting your bonus episode this month. It's just gonna be a toenail moon.
Hashtag
toenail and that's moon. That. Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. And that's that.
Yeah, that's that. So I guess we should get into our Estudiante Estrella.
Yes. I'm gonna bring back a topic that we talked about not too long ago, and I hope it flooded all of your FYPs, because the title is called hashtag Christian Prison Talk.
Oh Lord.
So iPhones, if you're listening, Prison Talk, Christian Prison Talk.
It's about to be on all y'all FYPs.
Yep. Mm. And this review was sent in by Jay Wizzle.
Jay Wizzle? For Rizzle? Jay
Wizzle to the Hizzle for Rizzle?
For Rizzle!
Yo. And it is 5 stars. Bow, 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 bow. And Jay Wizzle said, after listening to the episode where Brooke mentioned Christian prison TikTok, it has now shown up on my FYP. FYP. Ha 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 ha. Had to let y'all know. Love you both and love listening weekly. You're the bomb.com. Love a fellow Alabama math teacher. Okay.
Period.
Yes. I hope now, since you gave us this review, I hope Christian Prison Talk floods your FYP again.
Yeah. Bring that, what's it called? That back to back.
Yeah.
That repeat.
So. Thank you for the review.
So, Jay Wizzle for Rizzle, thank you so much for your review. This gold starts for you. Bang.
I like the tongue thing. Y'all can't see her, but she did like a new tongue thing.
You know, sometimes I just do what my body feels, and that's what it was. That's what it's feeling.
Yeah.
You know?
Period. Period. Yes. I mean, that was the perfect timing.
That was really good. That was your timing was impeccable. I'm so proud of you. I'm so proud of you. I've never been prouder.
Try. Yeah. So should I do this? Yeah, should just, I do this? Period. I was gonna say, let's see. Sit down. Shut up. The murder is about to begin.
Out.
What up, y'all? Welcome back. It's Teachers Talk Crime, and y'all already know what it is. We about to be in here talking about murder, suicide, dating violence, domestic violence, sexual assault, and stalking. So, y'all already know what it is. Don't sit here and act like y'all don't. We about to get into it. So, if you're not ready, I'm going to need you to leave. All right, then.
So first things first, everyone, so you already heard Ari's disclaimer, so you already know what that means, that this lesson is going to have a lot more layers than our typical episodes. So even though the disclaimer already said it, I will be giving another disclaimer like right before telling y'all, just in case. And this case had me absolutely and truly shooketh. And I feel like the last time I was truly shooketh like this was the Paris Lee Bennett case. And we all know that that case was wild.
And if you haven't heard it, go listen.
Yes. I can't remember what episode, but Paris Lee Bennett. Yeah, that one. So I have no idea why on earth I would continue to research this lesson after Googling the summary. Like, I just really don't understand. It's kind of like when you drive past like a car accident and you don't want to look.
And you look.
But you look anyway. So with that being said, I just need to get this over with because I need to just heal from all of this. It shattered me. It took me probably like 5 days to write this because I was just like, oh my God, I need to take a break.
It's a lot. That's how it was with the Jasmine Richardson case.
Yeah. Yeah.
Certain cases just stick with you harder than others.
Yes. It's just so creepy McCreeperson. I don't like that. I do not like that.
Okay. I'm ready for it though.
All right. Well, here we go. So we'll begin today's lesson on December 1st, 1987 in Townsend, Massachusetts. So Andrew Gustafso, called home to his wife, 33-year-old church nursery teacher Priscilla Gustafson, okay, to tell her the great news. According to one of the sources, he had just landed a really big real estate deal, and he called Priscilla to see if she could find a sitter for their two kids, 7-year-old Abigail and 5-year-old William, so they would be able to go out and celebrate, you know, which is, like, super cute, like.
Like a date night.
Yes. Like, oh, babe, I got this big deal. Let's get a sitter for the kids so we can go and, you know, partay. You know? It's adorable.
It is.
So when he didn't get Priscilla on the phone, he decided to just go home. And they would just, like, set up the sitter and the celebration plans together. So he drove a mile to their home, which was located in, like, an isolated part of the woods, which I could never do. That, no. I need neighbors.
You've been freaking out since we were on this call.
What do you mean?
And... like, you keep hearing noises.
I know. I don't, child. I can't. Like, I got neighbors above and below, but, like, I just, having neighbors that are, like, miles away, I can't do.
Yeah.
There's no way. So as he pulls into the driveway around 5 p.m., he sees his wife's car in the driveway, but, like, the lights in the home are off. And mind you, it's 5 p.m. They have two children. Their children are not asleep. It's like dinner time.
Yeah, they're wide awake playing.
Mm-hmm. Child, I know mine are. So Andrew entered the home and found Priscilla dead on the bed in their bedroom with two close-range 22 caliber shots to her head. And here's the first trigger warning, so I'm just going to give you a few seconds. She was pregnant with their third child.
Oh, God.
Yes. Mm. Mm-hmm. According to one source, Andrew remembers running into the kitchen to call the police and his parents. And the same source quotes the following from Andrew when he recounted the events from that evening. I was too afraid to go look for my children because I was afraid I'd find them dead. It was so shocking and unbelievable. I screamed. I wailed.
Wow. Mm. The fact that you knew that your kids were in this, suffered the same.
Yeah.
Tragedy that your wife did, but you have such a good heart that you can't go physically lay your eyes on them,
mm-hmm.
because it would literally have crushed him.
Yeah,
I mean, he's going to be crushed regardless, but it's something you can't unsee.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I've heard people say that they wish they had not seen their loved one in that state.
Oh, absolutely. It's probably one something. Of the
yeah,
it's going to stick with you forever. It's something you just can't unsee, you know? I'm not sure how long it took, but I imagine that the cops got there pretty quick. But Andrew sat in one of the police officer's cars while the police searched the home. And here's your second trigger warning. Again, I'll give you a few seconds to just scooty-doot forward. Police found Abigail face down in the bathtub in the downstairs bathroom. Abigail also suffered from blunt force trauma to her head and compression of her neck. They also located William face down in the bathtub in the upstairs bathroom. Although it appeared obvious, it was later discovered that both children died due to drowning.
Oh, so they weren't just like in the, okay.
No, they also, you know, passed away, but Priscilla, you know, was shot and both the children were drowned.
Wow.
An officer came out to inform Andrew of the extremely tragic news, and later Andrew recalls the following. You lose total track of time. The shock gives you the adrenaline to get through it at first, but then it wears off.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this is the final trigger warning of the episode. Upon further search of the crime scene, police found semen on the corner of the master bedroom mattress and part of a condom on the floor next to the bed.
So, oh, that's disgusting. Yes. Okay, but that's DNA.
Yes.
Doesn't bring them back, but it is DNA.
Yeah, so Priscilla was raped and shot.
Mm.
A gag made from a brown sock was also discovered in the closet. It had saliva on it, too, so that's how they figured it was, like, stuffed in her mouth while whoever did this did what they did. Police were able to find sneaker prints in the flower bed in front of the house, and after following it, they discovered that the family's nameplate was missing. Now, I was initially really confused because when you think of a nameplate, like, I think of those necklaces from, like, when you were a kid that had your name and they were, like, gold-plated, those. But it's actually a sign that's, like, on the outside of the house that has the family's last name on it. I didn't know there was a name for it.
Hmm.
I didn't know. Who knew?
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah. The more you know.
You learn something new every day.
Yes. Search dogs were brought out that night, and the following day, while conducting a search of the woods, Trooper Sean Baxter located the following. The Gustafson's nameplate, a blue and white flannel, and wet work gloves. The gloves later tested positive for gunshot residue, and the police had the search dog sniff the shirt, in which the dogs brought police within 3 to 4 feet of the home of 17-year-old Daniel LaPlante.
So, wow. I knew that.
Wow. Yeah. According to the court documents, two state troopers interviewed Daniel the following day at the Townsend Public Library. And I'm not sure why he wasn't interviewed the day that the search dogs like hit on his home, but nonetheless, they did interview him. And the story that he told them was that the day before, he was at home alone watching TV, and then he went to his 6-year-old niece's birthday party. The police also asked him what he was wearing that day, and he said gray sweatpants, a football shirt, and a pair of Converse. With nothing incriminating to hold him on, he couldn't be taken into custody. Later that day, the police went to his home to interrogate him more. However, as the police approached his home, Daniel was on the porch of his house and bolted it into the woods, which is
just like zoom, zoom by.
Yeah. He was like, oh, snap, the cops, and ran, which, sir, that's hella guilty.
It is very suspicious, but I mean, look at how many people do it.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm. And they're like, well, I thought I was running because you was chasing me. I don't know.
Yeah. And at this point, the DNA from the condom is not. I mean, it takes months for DNA to come back, so.
Yeah, and also, this is like, what, 1987?
Ooh, that's true. Never mind. Yeah, so, they didn't even know that. I mean, they knew they had something, but they didn't know they had DNA. I forgot what year it was. Wow. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, the police were not able to track him down in the woods, so they put out an APB for him because he clearly had something to hide since he ran as soon as the police showed up. While a helicopter, search dogs, and over 50 local and state police officers searched for Daniel, police searched his home. And in the search, they found the following. A .22 caliber bullet casing that matched the ones that were found at the Gustafson home. A pair of Converse sneakers in his closet that matched the shoe prints in the flower bed at the Gustafson home. A sock that had fibers that matched fibers at the Gustafson home. And a cordless phone that had been stolen from the Gustafson home. With Daniel's fingerprint on it.
He was a very sloppy killer.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He, like, took everything.
I mean, he's 17. But, like, that's all that's every piece of incriminating evidence that they need.
Absolutely.
Like, you're going to jail, sir.
Yes. You're getting locked up. So, needless to say, Daniel clearly had done this.
Yeah. It doesn't just appear in your house for no reason. Yeah,
like, oh, I don't know. Why is it here? Huh. No.
It's not mine.
Yeah.
It's not all of my things that just fit me so happily.
They just happened to be here. I didn't do anything. Like, sir.
Yeah.
Let's be real. The dogs hit on your house. You were super suspicious. You ran when the cops came to you for the second time and all the stuff was found in your house. You did it. It's a done bun. Side seal delivered.
Yeah.
So with the manhunt still on and the news coverage growing on Daniel, you would think that he would be smart about his movements. But thank goodness he was not. So Daniel kidnapped a woman at gunpoint and demanded that she drove him around. And I'm not sure how, but thankfully she was able to get away on foot, which meant that Daniel was still driving her Volkswagen van. The woman notified the police of her interaction with Daniel, so now they knew exactly what he was moving around in. And others were too. The police were getting a number of calls about sightings of Daniel, and Daniel was finally apprehended around 6:30 p.m. on December 3rd, 1987, hiding in a dumpster in Ayer, Massachusetts, which was about 11 miles from where he lived in Townsend.
So he didn't even make it but 11 miles?
Yeah.
He's a dummy McDumminson.
Yeah, everybody can't, you know, have the brains, man.
He clearly don't got no brains. And you already, okay, so now we're adding a kidnapping charge. And what is it when you use a weapon? It's like,
Assault with a...
Yeah, but then he robbed her. He took her car.
Yeah, that's a lot. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you got...
On top of the three people you murdered? Psh,
yeah.
Child for life.
What is his deal? I know you're going to tell us, but I need some background knowledge.
Oh, I'm getting it, girl. You know how I get down.
Okay.
So Daniel was clearly arrested, and according to one source, he was laughing hysterically during this time. Like, sir, what is funny? What's hee hee ha? You were nuts.
Yeah.
So when they searched him, they found a gun in his underwear.
In his underwear?
That's what I said.
Well, I guess he's wearing tidy whities because how are you going to put him in boxer briefs? Because then it's just going to slide right on out.
That just seems very uncomfortable. So now we all know
you a tidy whitey wearer.
Yes. It just seems very uncomfortable to me. Like, in your underwear? Like, was it between the cheeks? Like, where was it? Like,
it's a lot.
So as per usual, Ashley fashion, I'm going to give you some background information on Daniel before we go into his trial, because there is more. Daniel was born on May 16th, 1970 in Townsend, Massachusetts, and he had a very incredibly traumatic childhood. I'm not sure when his father did this, because I couldn't find any dates in any of the articles I found, but Daniel was physically, psychologically, and sexually abused by his father.
And there it is.
Mm-hmm. And during his teens, he was living with his mother, Elaine Moore, and stepdad, David Moore, and his two brothers, Stephen and Matthew. During this time, David was also being physically, psychologically, and sexually abused by his stepfather also.
So every male that has walked into his life has, what's it called?
Traumatized it?
Yeah, but like, when you lose your trust in like people, you know what I mean? Like,
take advantage of?
Yes, every male that he had the opportunity to look up to and learn from and learn to be a better man, those people let him down in the worst way possible.
Yes, oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. So we have a lot of childhood trauma here. A ton. In school, Daniel wasn't any better. He was diagnosed with dyslexia, so he struggled with his schoolwork. And I know what that's like, because when I was in high school, my English teacher accused me of having dyslexia, and I like flipped out on her, even though low key, I think I do have some like remnants of dyslexia. Like, there's this road by my parents' house that's it's called Marconi Road, and every time I look at it, I see macaroni every single time. I don't know why. I know the word says Marconi, but every time I look at it, it looks like macaroni. I don't know. He also didn't have much of a social life. According to one source, the kids in school considered him creepy and weird. Classmates tended...
I can see that.
Yeah, and wait till you see his picture, man. Like, Classmates tended to avoid Daniel at all costs due to him smelling bad and coming to school in dirty clothes.
Ew.
Yeah, that's yuck. The school had some concerns about Daniel and recommend that he go see a psychiatrist. He began seeing a psychiatrist in his early teens and ended up being diagnosed with hyperactivity disorder. Unfortunately for Daniel, his psychiatrist ended up sexually abusing him, and this continued for over a year. So when he finally discontinued his sessions with his psychiatrist, he was mentally in a worse place than he was when he started his sessions, clearly.
Yeah. This kid could not catch a break.
No.
Like, at all.
Mm-mm. During this time, Daniel began breaking into houses. This experience for him was about the rush and not necessarily about taking the things from all of these homes. So something he enjoyed during his B&Es was moving furniture and items around the home. A direct quote from... A direct quote from one of my sources states the following. He derived pleasure from the knowledge that he was scaring people, even making them think they were losing their minds. Which is a different type of scary. Like, the fact that you find pleasure in, like, making people think they're nuts by moving things around in their home. It's just, like, absolutely terrifying. At the age of 16, Daniel began talking to 16-year-old Annie Andrews. Annie lived in Pepperell, Massachusetts. And according to Google Maps, Pepperell is about an 11 to 13-minute drive from Townsend. Annie just recently lost her mother to cancer and lived with her father, Brian, and her 8-year-old sister, Jessica. Brian had to work to support his family, so he wasn't around much due to work. And Annie was your typical 16-year-old. She was starting to develop crushes and talk to her friends about dating. However, she randomly started receiving these calls from a boy claiming to have gotten her number from a mutual friend who went to their high school. This boy was clearly Daniel. However, the reality was that Daniel had broken into her family's home previously and found out that Annie lived there. And he did enough snooping to recover her phone number.
Like you said, okay, Creeper McCreeperson.
And period. Anywho, Daniel called Annie and started talking himself up. According to one source, he described himself as tall, blonde, athletic, and smart. Which was legit the opposite of Daniel.
I was about to say, the smart part, we can go ahead and cross off the list.
Like, the opposite. So Annie was initially a little suspicious of Daniel, but being at that age, you know, she has all these crushes. She's like, ooh, boys want to talk to me. She decided to give him a chance. And she actually enjoyed the conversations that she and Daniel were having. And after exchanging a few conversations on the phone, they ended up setting up a time to meet for their first date.
Oh, Lord.
When Daniel showed up to Annie's house.
And he wasn't everything he described.
And he was absolutely not.
Catfish before catfish.
Literally, yes. She quickly realized that her Prince Charming was not who he had claimed to be. A direct quote from one of my sources states the following. He was in dirty clothes, not athletic, not handsome, and not blonde. His hair was dark. So literally the opposite.
Dang, you couldn't even shower?
Dirty clothes, like you going on a date.
Yeah.
If I go on a date and you smell, I'm leaving. I'm sorry. You got to go.
Oh, 100%. Like, somebody about to call with a fake emergency.
Like, I'm taking the time to get myself ready for this date. I expect you to do the same. Although Daniel wasn't who he said he was, Annie still decided to proceed with the date. And kudos to her for being a good person, because again, I'm not that kind of a person. I'm not. I can't.
Yeah. She's, oh, bless her.
So their date was the absolute worst date.
Obviously.
But like, you would think it was just because he lied, but it wasn't. He kept asking her questions and details about the death of her mother the whole entire time.
Ew. I don't like that.
No, I hate that for her. And after about an hour, Annie couldn't take any more of this extremely uncomfortable date. So she found a way to get away from Daniel and went home. But unfortunately for her, Daniel not only knew where she lived, but was also obsessed with her. Because remember, he had previously broken into her home and like saw pictures of her and was like, ooh, that girl. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
A few days after her date from hell, Annie and Jessica decided to try and contact their mother with a seance. Which for me is an immediate, absolutely not.
I'm out.
I don't fool with things like that.
That's a no from me. Mm-hmm. I went to Five Below the other day and I was looking at their cute little Halloween shirts. Yeah. And one had a Ouija board on it. And I was like, let me drop this right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's a no.
Absolutely. I don't want none of that energy into my life. I remember when I was a kid and like at sleepover parties and people would try to bring out the Ouija boards and
nobody ever did that. I'd be gone.
And do the like the Bloody Mary thing in the mirror. Nope. I don't know. Ashley, mama,
can't
come
do that.
And scoop me, please.
I need to go home now. Landline, please.
Yes. I don't fool with things like that. I don't like that. So during the seance, the girls did receive answers to the questions that they were asking their mother in the form of knocks on the wall. So as months went on, bizarre things began happening around the household. According to one source, the knocks on the wall turned into banging on the walls. Furniture was being moved. TV channels were being changed. And half-filled cups of milk would be empty after either of the girls left the room for a short period of time.
Mm-mm. Our sorority house was haunted. And no, things
was
like that
it?
Would happen.
That's terrifying.
Yes, because it used to be an orphanage.
Oh, hell
yep.
No.
And I lived there for 2 years and things like that would happen all the time. Like cabinets would close. Like you would move a cup to this side and then you'd go back and it'd be on the other side. It was.
Brooke, stop. That's really scary.
Yeah, I know. I lived there. I know.
Brooke, why did you live there for 2 years?
Because we had to.
Why did you have to?
Because I was on the exec board. I was the treasurer.
Well, you could treasure off campus.
I can count money off campus.
Not in that orphan home, okay? Oh my God, that's I'm cringing. Ooh, that's so scary. So the girls were absolutely shook, and they went to their father about their concerns. However, he brushed them off. He essentially told them that it was all in their heads and not to worry. Messages began getting written on the walls in blood, aka ketchup. And it got so bad that one day while their dad was at work, the girls ran to a neighbor's house and called their dad, telling him that they would not go back into that house until he came home from work.
I don't blame them at all.
When Brian came home, the house was disheveled. And as Brian continued to investigate the home, he made a shocking discovery. He found a boy in his deceased wife's closet wearing her clothing, and he had a hatchet in his hand.
It was the boy. Was it him?
I'll get there, Brooke.
Because I would have...
Now here's...
No, sir.
No. No, ma'am.
Nope. Not today, Satan.
So now here's where my sources are going to get wonky. One source said that the boy held Brian and the girls hostage in the room, but Annie somehow managed to escape and call the cops from a neighbor's house. Another source stated that Brian and the boy like got into a fight and the boy managed to get away. Either way, the boy managed to get away.
I don't know.
This part of the story was also a little wonky because one source says that Brian and the girl stayed away from the house for a few days. And when Brian went back a couple days later, he discovered the intruder again and called the cops. However, the other source states that after Brian initially found the intruder the first time and he got away, that the police came to investigate the home and found the intruder in a hidden crawl space behind a cupboard, which was built into the wall of Annie Andrews' bedroom. So he was,
We're moving. We're moving. Oh, yeah. Like, we're packing tonight. We're moving. The house is officially for sale. I'm out.
So either way, this boy was hiding in their crawl space and tormenting them. Okay? It was discovered that the boy had been hiding in this space for months.
This reminds me of, obviously fictional, but like this reminds me of my first CSI episode that literally traumatized me as a kid in sixth grade because there was a person hiding in their attic for months and had little drills, holes in their ceiling, but he would keep the piece of wood in there and he would just pick up little holes as they would go through the house and like watch them through the peepholes. Traumatized me. That one case made me think people live in my attic.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Like, this case alone, like, just this part.
I need
like
to go check our attic.
All the noises that I hear in this apartment, I'm like, is there someone...
hiding in my house?
I would literally shit myself.
I don't even know what I would do.
I would absolutely poo-poo on myself.
Jesus would have to take me right then.
Take me now, Jesus.
Yeah.
Take me now. So, as you probably... already guessed, the boy in the crawl space was none other than Daniel LaPlante himself.
Of course it was.
I mean,
did we think it was anyone else?
I mean, I sure hope not. Yeah. Because, you know, this is kind of his lesson. So, you know. Daniel was obviously immediately arrested. However, he was given an extremely light sentence. He was released from a juvenile detention center in October of 1987. This was just 2 months before he broke into the Gustafson home.
Not the vibes I need.
Like, I just don't understand. Like, granted, he didn't hurt anyone. So I understand why.
Okay, he did not hurt anybody, but when your house gets robbed while you're at work, we went through this when I was a kid. Our house got robbed twice when I was a kid.
Oh, that's terrifying.
They broke the same window to get into the house.
Oh.
And like, no, we were not home. No one was physically harmed. But there's an uneasiness in the house at that point in time, knowing that someone's been in your safe space while you're not there. Like, it creates this weird, ominous fear. And so, no, he didn't hurt anybody, but he disrupted the peace in that home.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's why, like, I feel like for him, because like you said, he's disrupting the peace, but that's what Daniel got off on. You know what I mean? He liked to rearrange and make you, like, let you know that someone's in here disrupting what the place that you call home.
Yeah.
Mm. So now that we have all the information about Daniel, we can move forward with his trial. Daniel was charged for the triple murders of Priscilla, Abigail, and William. He was tried as an adult and was sentenced to 3 consecutive life sentences.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. In 2019, he tried to appeal to have his sentence reduced, and thankfully the court decided to uphold his original sentence. Daniel LaPlante is currently serving 3 life sentences in a Massachusetts state prison and will be eligible. Ashley, go back and read that sentence. What are you saying? Daniel is currently serving 3 life sentences in a Massachusetts state prison and will be eligible.
You got it.
Thank you. For parole in 2032. And I'm just like, if you got life sentences, why are we even going to be eligible for parole? That. You know? Like, why?
Well, you took the lives of a mother. And I'm really upset. Not only the eligible part, but like, you didn't just kill 2 kids and a mom. You actually killed 3 children.
Yes.
Why did he not get a charge for the newborn?
I'm not sure about that. Because I know some cases like the Chris Watts one.
Yeah.
He was charged because she was pregnant.
So was Scott and oh my God. Lacey. Peterson, Scott Peterson and Lacey Peterson.
Yeah.
She was pregnant and he was charged.
And I'm wondering if it's just because of the times, because this was back in 1987, you know? So I'm wondering if maybe that's why they didn't, not necessarily not considered it a life, but you.
Right. I mean, it could have been, definitely could have been. And it also could be based on like how far along she was.
True. Because we don't know.
I mean,
know
they could
well.
Have like time constraints on that.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. But regardless, You did not take 3 lives. You took 4.
Yes. And the fact that you can, I mean, granted, I don't see him getting out.
Because no, clearly. Hopefully not.
Clearly he has some things that he really needs to just, you know, handle for himself. Like with all that childhood trauma, you know, I don't know if he's truly gotten the chance to work through those traumas. So he could better understand maybe.
He had the odds stacked against him. I will say that.
Oh, absolutely.
He definitely had the odds stacked against him. He, as a child himself, did not deserve the hand that was dealt to him. No child deserved that. What he went through should not have happened by any means to anyone. And that was out of his control, unfortunately. But at the end of the day, yes, that did instill some of those thoughts into his head, which did lead to the actions that he committed.
Absolutely.
But again, everyone does wake up with a choice every single day.
Yes.
And could the circumstances have been different had he received the proper help and management?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe.
I feel like at one point, like when it's like, okay, my dad, my stepdad, my psychiatrist,
yes.
The person who's literally supposed to help me work through all of this is also adding to my trauma. I feel like at some point he had to have just lost faith in it all. And that's when the decline happened. Maybe that's why he just didn't care about his appearance. That's why he was coming to school dirty. That's why he was, you know, not doing what he needed to do. Because he's like, well, no one gives a shit about me. You know what
so
I mean?
Why should I give a shit about myself?
Exactly. So I feel like at some point, like his, like you said, his experiences did shape him. But at the end of the day, like you said, you'd have a choice.
Mm-hmm.
And he chose to just, what's the word I'm looking for? Wallow.
Yes. Yes, he did. And but okay, honestly though, why did his mother allow this behavior from one, his father, his birth father, and two, his stepfather, and then three, you send him to get help and the person you sent him to is doing it to him again. So honestly, I'm not blaming mom at all, but I am slightly saying you should have looked out for your son better.
Yeah.
And then, you know, at the schools that he went to, those counselors should be a safe space.
Yeah.
And he should have felt comfortable enough to go to those school counselors and be able to divulge this information safely and then receive proper help and to get authorities involved.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But again, I don't know if these things were in place the way that they are now back then.
Probably not. And I also couldn't find information on, like, the mom, like, if she knew about all of this stuff, or is this something that came out, you know, with him in interviews or when they were, like, talking to him about stuff and it came out? Like, I'm not really sure, because I couldn't find anything on the mom and her, like, thoughts or her, like, position on what was happening to her son, or if she even knew. So I don't even know the level of knowledge she had on the situation.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Yeah. I did want to end this lesson on a lighter note, because I completely understand that this lesson, even though it was a lot quicker than our normal episodes, I was literally just telling Brooke on a break, like, I did not realize how short this was. I really thought this was a long one, but it really wasn't that long. I don't know what happened.
But we needed to keep y'all short this week since we gave y'all Tyler Hadley last week.
Because that man, his dirty ass party. Yeah. But Andrew Gustafson, Priscilla's husband, was able to find love again after the tragedy he endured. He met his now wife, Carol, prior to losing Priscilla at Townsend Congregational Church. At the time, she was married to her first husband, but unfortunately, he passed away from a brain tumor in 1984 after they had been married for 15 years. Mm-hmm. And Carol knew what it was like to lose somebody that they loved, so naturally, they were drawn to each other when they were, like, going to church, and they talked about their grief at first. Andrew quotes the following when discussing Carol. "It certainly would have been much more difficult without her. I don't know whether I would have made it or not without her. Now I have a reason to get up in the morning, something to live for."
That's so sweet.
Stop.
She was the angel that he needed.
On January 1st, 1989, Andrew and Carol got married. And even though some, including themselves, thought that they were getting remarried too soon, Carol is the one who said it best. According to one source, she stated the following. "There were few people in this town that were just aghast. But when you've gone through this kind of loss, you're just glad the sun is shining every day. Life becomes more precious to you. We didn't want to waste it."
That is very sweet. Well, we talked about that today. Me and Medley talked about that. Oh, we were just talking about people in our lives who have lost their significant others, you know, through tragedy. And I personally knew a girl, and it was just her boyfriend. Her boyfriend and I went to school together, and he passed away, I would say, about 5 years ago in a boating accident.
Oh.
And he had the most precious girlfriend and the most, like, she was so precious. She still is a great person.
Mm-hmm.
And he passed away, I want to say it was probably a little bit more than 5 years ago. And she still has not dated. But then Medley told me a story about how there's a woman that she knows currently who just lost her husband like a year ago and is already in a relationship and posting him. And, you know, Medley was like, I think that might be too quick. And I said, hold on, because who are we to put a time limit on someone's grief and how they process that grief?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We said it just, I think it was on the last episode or the two episodes ago. Everybody grieves, you know, differently. Mm-hmm. Some people choose to grieve and just kind of just, you know, take it back to themselves. And some people choose to, you know, not grieve for as long and just decide, you know, I've got one life to live. You know, my person wouldn't want me wallowing in this sadness. So I'm going to go out and seize the day and see where life takes me.
And I think that that's like how, like, the girl that I know, she hasn't looked at it as like perspective of like, let me go. He wouldn't want me to wallow. He definitely doesn't want her to wallow. But she's used that in a way of like, she travels. She takes their dogs with her to travel.
Oh.
She has been so many places. Like,
yeah.
She's not letting a day go by wasted. But that doesn't have to involve a man.
Absolutely, you know what I mean? Not. Like, yeah.
And, you know, like my grandmother, and you typically see men when their wives die. You typically, I use the word typically, you typically see men move on quicker and remarry faster mm-hmm. when their wives pass away.
Mm-hmm.
And women either don't remarry at all or it takes them a lot longer.
Yeah.
And my grandmother, we always thought that she wasn't dating because she would she thought that we wouldn't approve.
Mm-hmm.
And so collectively as the women in the family, you know, one day we were like, you know, like if you want to date, it's been years. You know, he passed away when I was 4.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been years. And she looked us dead in the eye and she said, I don't want to date because of you guys. She said, I don't want to date because I've already had the best. And she's like, there's nobody else out there. I've had the best.
Oh my gosh, stop.
And she's like, and I'm satisfied with that. I'm satisfied wow. knowing that he was my only person.
Wow.
And she has never dated.
Wow.
Yeah.
That and is so like, deep.
It is deep. It is so deep. And I was like, Midley, I don't know what I would do if I lost James. I was like, I can't tell you that I would never date again. I said, but I also can't tell you that I would jump right into a relationship. Yeah. I said, I just feel like people process it differently.
Yeah.
And I think that you're right. Carol said it best. Like, only they knew what they were going through and absolutely. Why, if the sun is shining for them, who are we to say,
yeah,
stop?
And at the end of the day, you're always going to have people who judge.
Well,
that's what people do. Some people are haters. Some people are natural haters. And
yeah.
In the words of my good friend French Montana, if you ain't got no haters, you ain't popping. So hate well, on
I just
man.
Added a new hater to the list. So hello. Welcome to your side hello, of the list.
Hater. Hello. If you listening, shame on you. Shame on you and your actions, sis. Okay. Watch me get blocked too. just some light tea in there for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sprinkle it in. Sip, sip.
So the most beautiful thing about their marriage is that Andrew wears both of his wedding bands, one for Carol and one for Priscilla.
That is the sweetest thing ever. That also speaks volumes of Carol.
Yes, like she knows, like he lost her in the most abrupt way. He was coming home to be like, baby, let's go get this dinner.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get a sitter for our kids. And he walked in something that he could have never imagined.
Yeah.
Like, never.
That is really sweet that he has them both with him.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she's up in heaven and very happy that he did find peace. Yeah. I mean, she would never have wanted him to suffer.
Yeah, absolutely. Andrew and Carol completed their family when they adopted their two daughters, Laura and Holly.
Oh, and they adopted?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Could they get more perfect?
Right? I feel like, you know, when you lose your kids in that fashion, I feel like I think I read something like that he just, like he wanted a family, you know, like kids, but I feel like actually... And I feel like if I didn't read this somewhere, I'm just speaking for myself if I was him. I just feel like you lost your kids, so then making more kind of feels like, what's the word I'm looking for?
I know what you're trying to say. If you can't think of the word, I think that like, I mean, I don't know the word you're looking for, but I do know what you're trying to say.
Like he feels guilty, you know?
Yes. He's betraying them.
Yes, there you go. Like, it's just like a betrayal. Like, what do you mean? Mm-hmm. I lost my kids and now I'm just going to go, you know.
Makes them more.
Yeah. Like, I feel like that's how I would feel in this situation. Like, who am I to go and have more children when my children were taken away? Like, what? You know what I mean? Like, that's just how I would take it.
Right.
Andrew and Carol got to experience marriage with one another for 25 years.
No.
That's so sweet. Unfortunately, Andrew passed away at his home on May 22nd, 2014.
But you know, he found peace.
He found peace.
And now he gets to go be with Priscilla.
And oh my gosh. And his kids.
Yes.
My heart is shattering in my soul. In my soul. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the lesson on Daniel LaPlante.
Well, Daniel is a piece of crap.
Yeah, now he's bald.
Good. So. I hope he loses his armpit hair, too.
Why does he get to be smooth like a baby's bottom?
Yeah.
Absolutely not. He need to be hairy as hell.
Oh, yeah. Lose it on your head.
He need to be a Sasquatch. Or not even lose it on your head. Just have that one, like you got your hair, but you got
comb
that.
Comb over.
You got that little.
Comb over.
That little part that's just not there that you can't do nothing with that everybody yep. knows. Even if you comb it over, like, sir, you ain't got no hair there.
Yup.
You're bald.
Yup. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like him.
I don't like him either. Like, just the fact that, like, you're breaking into people's houses. And granted, we already took it back. We know this boy had trauma. But having childhood trauma does not give you the excuse to break in, torment, and kill people.
No, it doesn't.
Okay? Because if that was the case, granted, the world is pretty jacked up as it is. But the world would be a lot more jacked up. Okay?
Oh, yeah.
Okay? It would be.
Also, name somebody at this. Well, I mean, this is also the 80s. But, like, if we're speaking in 2022 terms, name somebody that ain't got trauma. Name somebody.
Everybody got a little bit, child.
Yeah.
I got
it
my
makes,
fair.
It makes you more humorous.
You know, I got my fair share of trauma. You know, you got your fair share of trauma.
Yeah.
You know, if you got your fair share of trauma, you know, just give me a thumbs up in the comments, you know?
Yeah.
Give me a thumbs up. It's just.
And if you don't, then kudos to you. Then, shout out to you. Ba-ba-ba-ba-bow.
Ba-ba-ba-ba-bow. Okay? Like, seriously. Yeah. But, yeah, that was the case. I just... Something just very unsettling about him. Just, like...
He's very disturbing. The crawl space gives me very much Gacy vibes.
Oh, yeah. It does. Mm-hmm. It's just... You were really in these people's house for months. Months.
Where'd your mama think you were?
You know, I was wondering that as well. Like, did she just think you, like, did you stay in there all the time? Or did you,
or
like.
Or did you go home and eat dinner and then go
back? Or
did you
go home sometimes? Or, like, you know. Like,
yeah.
What?
I got a lot of questions.
Yeah. It.
Did you have a blanket in there, or were you just sleeping on the floor?
I think when they found it, it just looked lived in. Like, I think maybe they said
like there was soda cans.
Yeah, like wrappers and things of that nature. And I'm just like, bro, like, you ain't got nothing. But I could also see if his mom was still with the stepdad, he didn't want to be there.
Absolutely.
But you had to be in a crawl space.
In somebody random's house.
Somebody that you went on a date with and were just the most inappropriate with. Like, she lost her mom to cancer, and you're asking
yeah,
her questions
still,
about her death?
She's still random. She's still random.
Yeah.
Even if you, like, you this really was not your childhood best friend.
No, you didn't know her. You literally broke into her house and like, hey, she's cute. I'm gonna get her number.
That's creepy.
Yeah.
Mm-mm.
Mm-mm. So, yeah, you know, ponder on that and just, you know.
Yeah.
Check your walls.
Check your attics.
Check everywhere.
Behind your shower curtain.
Stop, because I be shooketh.
I do it every day.
I be shooketh.
But, I mean, my shower you can see through, because it's clear.
Oh, that's dope.
So, I mean, I'm going to see you if you're standing there.
I'm going to see you, sir.
sir.
Yeah. Well.
Yeah. Tell them.
The bell don't dismiss you.
We do.
So, we will see you next Monday, and we'll see you on the toenail moon
episode.
Bye.
Bye.